Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
You've been asking who the greatest athlete of the generation is, LeBron or Tom Brady or Serena Williams. You know, guys, we have a Super Bowl. First of all, good morning. Good morning.
Morning.
We have a Super Bowl being played, by the way, in a state that was the last to recognize Martin Luther King Day, right? Between two African-American quarterbacks. It's the first time two African-American quarterbacks have faced each other in the Super Bowl, which is nuts when you consider the league 75% black, and like 50-plus times two white quarterbacks have faced each other in the Super Bowl. The odds against that happening in a fair situation is less than 1%, right? But we have a guest now who has a special place in American history, in American sports history and popular culture, because the negative stereotype, one of the many, against black men and players was that, oh, but can they lead a team to the Super Bowl, right, at the quarterback position? And Doug Williams dispelled that pernicious stereotype. In Super Bowl 22, he was the Super Bowl 22 MVP, Washington Commanders senior advisor to team president. Doug Williams joins us now. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning.
What's happening,
glad
Dougie?
To be with you. How you doing, man?
Good. Let me ask you this. Do you know this voice? That guy,
yeah,
Doug. No, not this one right here I'm about to give you. That guy, Doug, see, he can throw that thing. He can fly, let it fly. You know that voice?
That sounds like Grant.
No, Shaq.
Oh, yeah. I just talked to him this morning, man.
Is that right? Yeah, I'm going to see him. I'm going to see him in a couple weeks when I get back out to L.A.
Yeah, I just talked to him this morning. Hey, man, I'm glad to be on with you all, man. This is great.
We're glad to have you, Doug. Hey, can you just talk about the significance of both Patrick Mahomes and Jalen Hurts being in the Super Bowl?
Yes. You know, when you look at it realistically, you know, football been playing over 100 and some years, and to just be getting here now is, in a way, it's bittersweet in a way because it has happened. You know, some 45 years ago, Vince Evans and myself played in the first NFL game, two black quarterbacks, when he was with Chicago and I was with Tampa. You know, we got that out of the way. And then a few years later, I played in the Super Bowl, the first black quarterback, you know, which was such great significance. And you know, we got that out of the way, let everybody know that a black quarterback can lead a team and could think on his feet and get things happening. And then, you know, a few more years later, we get two black coaches, which we kind of dispel some of the myths that is out there. And on Sunday, man, I was sitting in my house after Jalen had won and sitting there watching Patrick, and I thought things was over when they fumbled that ball on that pass he tried to throw and he fumbled the ball. You know, you don't just give Joe Burrow the football back, because he usually don't give it back to you unless he scores. And they held him, and when I saw Patrick had the last shot, you know, my heart started just fluttering, you know, hoping that he can pull it off. And when it happened, man, I got a little emotion, you know, got water in my eyes, didn't cry, but I got water in my eyes, not because overjoyed as much as for what had just transpired for this league, because, you know, when you look at this league, you got 75% black, and the head coaches don't get an opportunity to work in this league. And, you know, I got overjoyed for that, but at the same time, it was sad thinking that we should have some black coaches in this league coaching more or less than anything, man. And but what those two guys did this whole season and how they played, I think it's unbelievable, you know, especially Jalen. You know, we knew Patrick for what he's done, but nobody gave Jalen a chance because they always looked at Jalen as an athlete, as a runner. But Jalen went and made himself over as a passer. He could do it from the pocket. He just happened to be a quarterback who could work from the pocket and think in the pocket, but also he put pressure on the defense because he can run. I think that's who Jalen really is.
You know, Doug, it's interesting you mention that about Jalen per se, because you've obviously played this game. You've been in the front office of this game. You just know the game. You play the position.
Mm-hmm.
What are they like? What are these people looking at when they're looking at a guy like Jalen Hurts coming out of Oklahoma? He did basically the same thing that Baker Mayfield did and Kyler Murray did, but yet and still, there was all these questions about his ability to display his talent at the level that we've seen over the last 2 years. Why is that?
Well, Keyshawn, I think we all know the reason why. You know, some people would not accept the fact that it's a young black man playing quarterback. Like, that would never – I mean, you know, you would hope they would, and a lot of people have, but at the end of the day, a lot of them would not accept the fact – not so much accept it. A lot of them don't like the fact that Jalen is playing quarterback. You know, when he got drafted in Philadelphia, a lot of them didn't want him in Philadelphia, you know, but at the same time, he knew who he was, and that's the most important thing, that he has the confidence. I mean, good that he was coached by his dad, who instilled a lot of things into him, and he realized who he was, and he went in and he took the job, and he showed everybody. Kid only lost one game this year. One game. You know, you can play in the NFL and lose one game. That says a lot about who is pulling the trigger. Yeah, he had some people around him, but everybody else do too.
Doug, when he wasn't playing, they lost two out of three. When he wasn't playing, they lost two out of three.
That in itself should tell him exactly what Jalen is made of and who he is and what he believes in, and he can get the job done. I'm just glad that he's in the Super Bowl, because hopefully he will dispel a lot of things out there about who he is.
Doug, we've obviously seen primetime come into Jackson State, elevate the program, and now moving on to a D1 division school. I wanted to ask you your thoughts around what you think occurred with Ed Reed and Bethune-Cookman.
Well, you know, I'm a black college advocate. You know, I went there, you know, and you got to look at it from this standpoint. If you've gone to a black college, you understand what you're dealing with. We already know that we underfunded. That ain't going to happen. We can't compete with Miami and all other big schools. So, when you're going there as a coach, and I coached at Grambling for 8 years, and I knew what I was working with, because number one, playing for Coach Eddie Robinson, one thing he always told us, that we've done so much with so little, we can almost do anything without nothing.
Mm.
So, you know, you go, that's the mindset you got to go in there with. But Ed went in there, you know, I like Ed Reed, but you can't go in there demanding a certain thing happen and saying what you want to happen, and then you got to air out the complaints. You know, that's tough, man. You know, and Deion went to Jackson, and it was a whole new ball game. Deion went in there, and he know he didn't have a whole lot to work with, but he got it. He rolled his sleeves up. He did what he had to do, and he left Jackson better off than what he did when he got there. But he went on and did what he's supposed to do. He got an opportunity to coach at another level, got paid well, and you know, got to move on. But at the same time, you go into Bethune-Cookman, you got to know what you got before you get there. You know, you know you didn't have that. So you can't go back and say, you know, we don't have this, we didn't have that, or what have you. And even the kids that say what they didn't have, you know, they went to school there. They knew they didn't have it. But at the same time, you know, hopefully that they'll get better. But at the same time, never be what Miami, LSU, Alabama, that ain't going to ever happen, man, because
they'll
always be underfunded.
Doug, when you look at where the Washington Commanders are now, you are senior advisor to the team president, and you're around the organization. What is it, in your opinion, because I know you're not the coach and not the general manager, but in your opinion, what is it that they need to get things turned around so we could be potentially talking about them in the Super Bowl a year or two from now?
Well, you know, we look at us, the Commanders, you know, we beat Dallas and we beat Philadelphia. We beat both of those teams. And so I think our team is well in a position to compete, to be in the playoff tournament. You know, quarterback is always one of the things that you're looking for, and we hadn't been able to have that guy behind the center that can, from a consistent standpoint. I think that's the number one priority. And the other thing, too, you got to believe that you can win. And I think we got to have somebody to come in and let everybody know, I'm talking about players. You know, sometimes coaches can do what they want to do, but you got to have a locker room with somebody in there that make everybody believe that we can get it done. And I don't know whether we've gotten to that point yet, but I think we're working on it. And we play some up and down games that we should have won, that we lost, and we beat some people that nobody expected us to win. So I think until they get to that point, Keyshawn, you know how it is. You got to have both sides of the ball. You got to have some guys in there that people look up to and believe that we can get it done.
Mm-hmm. Doug Williams got it done, the first African-American quarterback to win a Super Bowl in the NFL, who said it's bittersweet that finally, after all these years, two African-American quarterbacks face each other in the Super Bowl in a league that is 75% black. Thank you, Doug Williams. Appreciate
all right,
the time.
Thanks, Doug.
All right, thank you all for having me. Appreciate you.
You know, Max, you know what really would hurt their feelings?
Huh.
If it was two black head coaches and two black quarterbacks.
Key, you just said something I think we need to get into. Because I think there's a reason that we see it going backwards with the African-American coaches. I want to talk about that. Super Bowl 57 will be a hot ticket. Hot Ticket is brought to you by Vivid Seats, where you earn rewards with every purchase. Vivid Seat Rewards is your ticket to more tickets. Vivid Seats, life happens live.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack your 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th, one-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting LectricEbikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
This is once-in-a-lifetime opportunities we got right in front of us in our hands. So what you gonna do?
Dives for the far front pylon. Touchdown!
He's going to score! Jalen Hurts!
When we control the things we can, we damn good.
Sheds a tackle up the right sideline, 10!
Pack your bags. We're going to the Super Bowl.
We are, and we cannot wait.
Keyshawn, J. Will, Max, ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. We just had Doug Williams on the show in the last segment. Doug Williams. What's so funny? Key is cracking up in the studio. What's so funny, Key?
No, we're just laughing at Yates, man.
Yates is just funny. Ultimate brother. My brother.
My brother, my
brother.
Speaking
of brothers. So we just had Doug Williams on. Doug Williams, the first African-American quarterback to win a Super Bowl. What was that?
1988.
I was going to go earlier in the 80s. 88. Unbelievable. Anyway.
So unbelievable.
So now we asked him about, in the last segment, he was a guest on the show, and we asked him, what does it mean to him to see two African-American quarterbacks facing each other in the Super Bowl? It's the first time it's ever happened. Now, understand, the league is 75% black. It's been that way for a long time. Two white quarterbacks in a 75% African-American league have faced each other in, 50 Super Bowls? Something like that? And this is the first time it's happening the other way, in spite of the fact that it's 3-1 African-American to, what would you call it, European-American? At any rate, that the probability that that happens if things are fair are less than 1%, right? So we asked Doug Williams about it, and he said it's bittersweet. It's great that it happened. He's emotional about it, but bitter in the sense that it's taken this long. Key, you then brought up at the end of the last segment man, what if wait until it's two African-American quarterbacks and two African-American head coaches? And I don't think it's incidental. I don't think that it's just, you know, something that hasn't happened yet. In fact, if you look at the direction of African-American head coaches, it's gone backwards in recent years. And I wonder how much that has to do, whether it's conscious or not, with the fact that as the number of African-American quarterbacks has risen, the number of African-American head coaches has declined. I wonder if those two things are related. They're certainly correlated. And the reason I ask that, what comes to my mind, is the NFL is not perceived as a quote-unquote black league the way the NBA is. And when you think about it, where's the camera in the NFL constantly? It's on the quarterback and the coach. So even if it's 75% African-American, until recently, white. And you can market it to so-called middle America or white America, which is the, you know, that's the plurality, meaning the largest group at least, if not the bigger than, you know, more than 50% of the population, as a league that, you know, it's a TV show after all, demographics they can relate to. If the camera starts to go on black quarterback and then goes to black head coach, can they still market it that way? And that, I've had that thought. That's why when you bring it up, wait till it's two black head coaches, I don't think it's coincidental.
Well, it was two black head coaches once upon a time, which were the two first in Coach Tony Dungy, the Indianapolis Colts, and Lovie Smith in Chicago, and one of them had to win. So we've had that before. We've never had two black coaches and two black quarterbacks in the Super Bowl. And my whole thing was more tongue-in-cheek as to wait till that combination comes, then what? I would say I don't necessarily know when it comes to marketing, because Cam Newton was a black quarterback in the Super Bowl and was the MVP, and he largely was marketed to white America demographically across the board as well. And he's a black quarterback and is as black as they come at the quarterback position. And the league found a way to still incorporate him into the equation of a marketing standpoint. What has to happen from a quarterback perspective is when you only have 9 starting black quarterbacks out of 32 teams, your chances of having 2 play in a Super Bowl, those percentages shrink. So what has to happen is more starting quarterbacks in the National Football League, if you want to have this continue occur all the time, there has to be more black quarterbacks. And Doug Williams talked about the Jalen Hurts effect, where Jalen Hurts essentially did the same things in college that the other guys prior to him did, but he went at a lower round than those guys. And then when you look at the black quarterback position, right now, I think there's, in this year's draft, just off the top of my head, there's 4 black quarterbacks in the top 8 that will be drafted in the first 2 rounds. So that number is going to increase even more. Now, to speak to the coaching side of things, Jay, the owners have to make some decisions on whether or not the offensive-minded coaches that are in this league or whatever, that everybody keeps saying that that's the way the league is going, they're going toward that, they're going toward this and that, they've got to get away from that thought process and hire the person that's qualified, that knows what he's doing best for the job.
Yes.
Like Miko took the job in Houston because he was best for that job. And there are other black coaches that are assistants in this league that I can guarantee you are qualified. But they got to get their heads out of you-know-what to make those decisions.
So I'm all about people taking who's best for the job. I just think you need to expand your perspective or your view on the people that you're looking at who are best for the job, right, Key? Mm-hmm. Because we've talked about this before. Just to go to the coaching side really quickly, and then I'll touch on the quarterback side. The coaching side, we just saw this, right? Like David Tepper, the owner of the Panthers, just talked about how he's trying to do everything in his power to dispel the good old boy network, right? Yet Steve Wilks has rejuvenated this team, and then Frank Reich is available. Maybe he thinks Frank Reich is better, right? But like think about what that says. Well, I'm trying to dispel it because people internally look at my staff, and my staff is very diverse, and I have two black women on my staff, but that's internal. That's not externally
Understood.
Being seen, right?
Understood.
So there's a challenge with that. As it relates to the quarterback thing, real quick, I'll say to you, Key, is, I mean, you grew up in Cali.
Yeah. Like,
I grew up and playing for New Jersey around Newark. Fine. I didn't see a lot of black kids trying to play quarterback, right? Because they didn't see kind of, but they didn't see examples of them that they can do that. Now, like, I think kids see it more than ever.
Well,
seeing it, I can do that. I'm allowed to do that. I'm allowed to think that way, to be in that position. And I think it's changing right in front of our eyes.
Typically in football, when you are younger and you are playing with a more diverse crowd in Pop Warner High School football, the more athletic guy gave you, at the time, the best chance to win. So they were never really put at the quarterback spot because the quarterback couldn't play another position, right? We talk about Tom Brady. Tom Brady
couldn't throw the ball.
Tom Brady couldn't play
it.
Another position. He throw the football, where people around Tom can play another position. And I only bring Tom Brady up because we had the athletic conversation about being athletic and playing sports. Where you look at young guys nowadays, Malik Hooker, Bryce Young, Richardson from Florida,
C.J. Stroud.
They're now playing the quarterback position because there's other people around them that can still do the other stuff as well. And so now you're seeing an influx of these type of players in the National Football League with this skill set. And if you go back in time, you go back in history, we never was really given the opportunity and the chance to play the quarterback spot. Because if you put them in at the quarterback, then where's my other guy? Where's he going to play?
He can't play.
He doesn't have a spot.
I just remind people, too, that a lot of the hand-wringing, I'm sure, at least whether it's conscious or not, about, like, you know, the black quarterback or what that means for the league in terms of popularity, the most popular athletes ever, African-American, both, Muhammad Ali and Michael Jordan. Those are the two biggest athletes ever. By the way, you want to say Pele, Afro-Caribbean, I guess, right? If you consider that Brazil, right? Like, so it's in the end, it's not bad for business. I'll just leave with this one thought. The thing about the coaching thing, though, that's a little deeper, is some people can still take a paternalistic attitude towards sports, even at the quarterback position, because the coach is like the father figure, the dad, right? And it's difficult for a lot of people to wrap their heads around, a lot of white people, an African-American man in that position, which is why there was such an enormous reaction of, like, nonsense to Obama's election as president. But, I mean, that's plainly true. Or, in this case, you know, you look around, you say, but where are the head coaches?
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/unsportsmanlike today to get 10% off
your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/unsportsmanlike.
The Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max Podcast.
Hurts, man. He can run that ball. Like, oh my God, he's an athlete, man.
The number one defense against the run, and we scored four freaking rushing touchdowns.
The number one defense can stop all the rushes in the world, and what happened? We walked them down the field when we needed to, over and over and over.
I wasn't sold on Nick Sirianni. You know, last year, much like everybody else, he has led us to the Super Bowl in his second year as head coach of this team.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio. So this is a normal year where you get that bye week in between the conference championship games and the Super Bowl. Key, I know you didn't have the bye when you played in the Super Bowl. And the other...
Nada.
A couple weeks ago, I was trying to remember why when the Giants played the Bills in the Super Bowl, there was no bye week. I couldn't remember. Was it an earthquake, something? It was the start of the Gulf War. So they for whatever reason, that reshuffled things where there was no bye week. This is 91. No bye week between the conference championship and the Super Bowl. So sometimes that happens, and you also didn't get a bye week. What does that mean? What does that extra week, though, you think mean in terms of the team's preparations?
Well, you get a lot of stuff out the way, right? Think about it, Max. People like you and Jay harassing me for tickets. Can I get a hotel room? And then, you know, you have to deal with all of that. You have to prepare. So part of it is that extra week will allow you to get so much stuff out of the way, not even game plan-wise. Because you don't want 2 weeks of game plan. I don't need 2 weeks of game plan. You only need a week to game plan. When you have too much time, much like Sean McVay said against the New England Patriots, he had too much time. He'd start changing and going back and changing. So that week will allow you to get rid of the tickets. Because the ticket thing and the hotel thing,
it's a real thing.
Oh, man, it's a real thing. You got Uncle Johnny, little cousin Kiki. You got Jay Will that I played with at Duke. He's now asking me because we went to high school together. Can I get him some? Then I'm like, okay, let me check and see. And then I got my cousin that I hadn't talked to in 10 years, but my mother is friends with her mom. And so it's all that.
It's a mess.
Yeah, I got this business deal I want to talk to you about.
No, the business deal ain't the problem.
It's a hot mess.
It's the ticket and the hotel issue.
They turn you into a secretary.
It drives you crazy.
Really tough.
And it allows you, the extra week also allows you to rest your body. And now you can rest your body and your mind, and you can watch a little extra film and stuff like that before the start of the week.
See, I hear you on the ticket stuff.
Man, the ticket stuff is crazy.
But also, I'll be turning my phone off.
Yeah, but you can't.
But I can.
You can't.
But
Jay,
I can.
Because here's why you can't.
But you can call my mom. You can call my dad.
No, but
your
mother can't do anything about it because your mother's not talking to
the team reps
that tickets that she.
But see, I get more anxious about just the more time I have, the more my brain starts not becoming focused. The more I start reading articles, the more I start listening to TV. And dealing with all that stuff, like to me,
you get stale.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'd much rather there not be a long waiting period and have a shorter waiting period to turn around and play. It makes it more challenging.
No, you don't want the bye. I don't want the bye. We didn't have. We didn't have the off time for the week. We went from beating up on Philadelphia, busting their head in their nasty stadium with rats running around in the jail there. To flying home.
That was the last game at the Link, right?
Yeah, why y'all doing stuff to people's wives?
I meant the vet.
Eagles fans.
That was the last game at the vet, right?
The bad turf, and then we flew home to Tampa. We reloaded on Monday, and then we flew to Diego. And at that point, between flying home to Tampa and flying to Diego, we got all the ticket problems out the way.
Why didn't you have the extra week?
But hold on, Max. I got to ask the boys, like Pat and Alan Yates, both Philly fans, like why y'all do Fred Warner's wife like that, Sydney.
Well, your fans
saying that she got to go back and she don't feel safe and the blank U's and the shoving. I hope your plane crashes. Wow.
All right, the plane is a bit much. But,
but
Fred told her, don't come into that joint with no red on. She had a red bag. You wear anything opposite colors, you're going to get talked to.
You don't have to be walking around there, man.
Yeah. What's disrespectful?
Yeah, but you don't.
But what's disrespectful, though?
That's wild, though.
But we hope your plane crashes.
See, the plane is that's not disrespectful.
That's
wrong.
You just said that's not disrespectful.
No, I'm asking you what was disrespectful, because not everything that he said was disrespectful.
That part alone.
Shoving, the plane cursing is, around. Yeah.
The blank.
But everybody get cursed out, man.
Man, stop.
You gotta stop with this soft stuff.
He's his wife. She's chilling.
So is it more disrespectful for fans to fight fans in other stadiums, but when it happens in Philly, it's a big thing?
No, they shouldn't do it in no stadium.
See? Max said yes.
No, you shouldn't do it in no stadium.
Boo, Philly.
It's ridiculous. Boo, Philly for that.
But for every story like that, there's stories of San Francisco fans who just was on social media talking about all the positive things.
No, they're okay in San Francisco.
No, it wasn't San Francisco talking about the positive things about Philly. That was a Philly fan dressed up as a 49er fan.
No. He was there with his kids, and they all was getting ripped up. I got the video.
Yeah, good people out there.
It was a spin.
Hey, Pat, I noticed that you're dummied up. Where's Pat Costello? Why don't you chime in about defend your city, that miserable place where they attack opposing players' wives.
Well, look, Fred Warner's wife aside, because I do think if that's happening, that's too far. You shouldn't be doing that. But that aside, fans in general, if you're going to come into Philly and start talking wild and put stuff on the Rocky statue and try to take over.
Yeah, you're right about
Live
that. You're right about that.
And talk all this smack, and then you lose by 30. Like, you can't really expect Eagles fans to not celebrate and gloat.
Woe is me. They're being mean. Don't come to the city then. Don't touch the statue, because you saw what happened.
Wait, Minnesota, you want to be treated, right? What are you doing in Philadelphia?
Minnesota touched the statue. They got smacked. The Giants touched the statue. They got smacked. The Niners touched the statue.
Smack.
Game, set, match, dog. Don't touch the statue.
So what happened when we touched the statue?
Y'all ain't touched the statue.
Yeah, we did.
No, y'all didn't.
How are you going to tell him he didn't? You weren't even born then.
I ain't see no footage of that when I was four.
You wasn't born then.
When I was four, I didn't see no footage of it. No footage at all. It was just like, Tampa wine, Link's going great.
I took these dudes to eat last night, man.
Where'd y'all go?
Hibachi.
Hibachi?
Sushi spot. Crustaceans and all that.
And this dude ordered chicken fried rice, and that was it.
Yeah, because he got
Pat, don't look at me, Jay. It was Pat.
Pat. What? Chicken fried rice, that was it, though.
Yates ordered a bowl of white rice, and that's it.
Wait, no, he didn't. He had
I ordered
veggies,
white rice
chicken.
Yeah. They put all this random non-sauce
vegetable
that I don't eat on there. I don't eat that.
So y'all the extra sauce people?
Because
I'm not a sauce
boy.
Pat
and Yates don't eat anything that's not green and white. It has to have the Eagles colors.
If it was Mick Hibachi's pub, then I would have been great.
I told the dude, if they could have Hibachi the burger, I'd be fine. If chicken fried rice, we could have just stopped by Panda Express.
Ooh, I love Panda Express.
I mean, would have saved you some money.
I love Panda Express.
Just wasted
Orange
our time,
chicken,
man.
Panda Express.
Isn't that joint throwing food around? I'm uncomfortable.
Key can feed 20 people on $10, but takes these two to a place where it's a dollar per grain of rice.
I was trying to show him a good time. Never again.
Never again.
Never again.
It was fun.
It was also a Wednesday. I don't know what you like.
Yeah, they do whatever they want to do.
It's a Wednesday. We all have to drive home and...
See, Pat is very put upon by you taking him out to dinner, Key. He's very upset about it.
He wanted to go to a local pub.
Yeah, he's a pub guy.
Make hibachis.
Hibachi pubs.
And then Shannon,
it's a new thing.
Shannon ate and sat in the corner quiet.
And Shannon hasn't said anything this
whole
segment.
Shannon had three salads, too, by the way. He talked about, I'm a little tired. They overate last night. I'm like, hold on, brother.
Shannon's like, I'm taking that free dinner. I'm not putting my food in my mouth like these two.
Jerry, when the food came, I didn't hear a word for like 45 minutes, you know? Big J, you know, was just eating away.
Did you lab him?
I took him to the lab, trust me.
The last 20 years have been dominated the American sports landscape by Tom Brady and LeBron James. Who is the greatest athlete of the generation?
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Keyshawn, J. Will and Max, ESPN Radio. Last couple of decades,
make me feel
American
this
team
way.
Sports dominated nobody, by Tom Brady nobody. And LeBron James. Two players in their respective sports who played at the highest possible level and did it for longer than anyone has a right to do it. It's unreal how long these guys lasted at such a high level.
Mm-hmm.
But who's the greatest athlete of the generation? You know, it's funny too, Jay, what we haven't brought up so far is because basketball is basically soccer or hockey in a different form, right? Like it's a very similar, elegant sport that is easier for more people to understand. Football is a complicated sport with lots of rules. It's not as yep. elegant a game. And it's more uniquely American. And so basketball exports better than football. And so basketball is more of a worldwide sport. So LeBron's really been worldwide a different level of phenomenon than Brady. But in this country, I don't know if there's anyone bigger than Brady. But who's been the most dominant athlete? Who do you say is the most dominant?
The most dominant athlete in the world?
I can't hear Jay. I don't know if anyone else can. Shannon,
the most dominant athlete in the world?
Yeah.
Max?
No, in American team sports.
Oh, in American team sports.
Brady or LeBron?
I mean, if you're talking about the world, I'm going to go with the world sport. I'm going to tell you Messi. I know he finally got a World Cup.
Let's stick to
Wait, you don't like Messi, like
regular
man?
Sports. Basketball, football, come on.
First off, don't you ever disrespect the sport in world. The entire world, Max.
Yeah.
You want to talk about
Cristiano
Ronaldo playing for a Saudi Arabian team, making 80 million euros a year? You want to talk about Messi being proclaimed as one of the best athletes in the entire world? How do you just look over football? Like what football really means internationally?
Because soccer took root in places that didn't already have basketball. Where basketball
soccer was the original, Max.
Yes, it was. Basketball. And basketball is the evolution of soccer. It's a superior sport.
But basketball is trying to become an international sport. It's not even more close than football.
Because it hasn't been around as long. As when you say football, you mean soccer.
I mean soccer, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But because it hasn't been around as long, of course.
Okay. So.
But it's the evolution of soccer.
Brady, to me, it's more about the team sport. Brady, to me, epitomizes the team sport, the great winner, the GOAT, because it's a collective. And I know LeBron is part of the team sport, too. There's a tendency for me when I say dominant athlete, I think about the athletic ability of a basketball player. Right? Brady is more accomplished with the 7 Super Bowl rings. I get that. But like to me, LeBron, I've never seen an athlete like LeBron James before or Serena Williams in the last 20 years. LeBron is the top of the top athlete in the world because I think, like the caller said, I could put LeBron James on a football field. He'll be a hell of a tight end.
Yeah, LeBron,
he might be a Hall of Fame tight end when it's all said and done if you gave him a 10-year career.
The reason I go into intricate definitions and explanations of what we mean in thought experiments and stuff is because what you're hitting on, Jay, I think, and this is the type of stuff I like to articulate precisely, is when we say athlete, we all know what we mean. And even if you want to compare the two, in the end, I got to give it to the guy that is more athletic, that you can see is bigger, stronger, faster, right? All that kind of stuff. I agree.
Let me ask you, do you think LeBron James, if he were to play 10 years in the NFL, would not have similar stats to like that of a Shannon Sharp?
Maybe, he might have, but the fact is we can ask that question.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Dude,
I agree.
That dude at 6'8", 6'9"?
He's 6'8", 250.
He's not going to get every 50-50 ball?
Yeah, right.
I mean, I'm watching Gronk move. I've seen Gronk move. I watched LeBron James move. I'm like, LeBron James move better than Gronk. Now, granted, he hasn't had the wear and tear on his body, and who knows if he would have sustained. But, like, you would have put him in one of the best tight ends ever to play the game of football.
Pat in St. Louis. You're on with Keyshawn, J. Will and Max, ESPN Radio.
Thank you. I've been wanting to make these comments for a long time about this. And, of course, when we discuss Brady and LeBron, it's got to be about clutch. You guys were saying clutch earlier. Here's what I would like to know what defines clutch, because here's what I think it is. Number one, with LeBron James, we always talk about the shot Ray Allen hit, but we don't talk about Game 7 when he hit the jumper to close it out. Game 6 at Boston in 2012, when he had that miraculous game. Oh, we don't talk about Game 7. Down to the Bulls, 2-1 on the road. He hits the jumper on the sideline over Jimmy Butler to win the game and come back. And it goes on and on and on. When they say he's not clutch because he doesn't take a 35-foot jump shot with three guys in his face at the end of the game, that's not clutch. LeBron James and Tom Brady are pretty similar, but I would have to go with LeBron James, and he is as clutch as any athlete ever. We just leave out the 3-1 game, the 3-1 series against Golden State. I don't think there's ever anything in sport, in basketball, that was ever more incredible than that comeback. That was just unheard of.
I would disagree that LeBron is like as clutch as anyone who ever lived, but I would say he is a very clutch player. And people who would try to use clutch against LeBron, come on, that you're just hating.
Well, you know what it is, like, though, Max? We've talked, I mean, same way about Tom Brady, but like we've talked about LeBron, it feels like, between all the games that happened throughout the course of the regular season, between the teams that he's dragged to NBA championships,
right,
it almost feels like we poke holes in LeBron James way more than we do with Tom Brady, because Tom has won at such a high clip.
Yes, the percentage of times he gets it. Like, LeBron is penalized in a way.
Yes.
For making it to the finals on teams that shouldn't have been
yes,
there.
Yes, exactly.
Then people turn around and go, oh, they didn't win.
Like, look at his win rate in the finals. I'm like, look at the team that he dragged to the finals.
07,
though. He gets no credit for that.
What was that team doing in the finals? Only Allen Iverson ever dragged the worst team to the final. Maybe it wasn't even. I think LeBron's team may have been worse.
I keep going back to names like this, okay? Like, and it's all due respect because they played their tails off and they play hard. He got Matthew Dellavedova, paid $40 million.
Dude, he went six games with the Warriors.
$40 million for Matthew Dellavedova.
Second best player on the team.
Boobie Gibson. I mean, you go through the course of the names of dudes. You're like, hold on, wait, who are these dudes?
Kyrie got hurt. Kevin Love got hurt. Dellavedova was his crime partner. LeBron took the Warriors six games.
Man.
But he gets penalized for that?
Yes.
He gets penalized
That's
for
what
taking-
we do. That's what media does, Max.
Yeah. The answer to this question, LeBron versus Brady, is the answer, same answer to all sports questions, which is the answer is Michael Jordan. I'm sorry, Jay. I said it. We all know it's true.
We said the last 20 years, Max.
Michael Jordan.
It's not Key.
20 years.
I mean, Key played in that window. It's not Key.
Michael Jordan. I'm sorry. A little bit over Keyshawn Johnson.
Too soon?
Who said Key? Key's name is in this conversation?
Greeny is coming up. Keyshawn, Jay, Will, and Max will be back tomorrow, 6 a.m. Eastern.
Earth. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Keyshawn, Jay, Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.